I will now call the General Committee meeting to order. Please note that assistive listening devices for use in the council chambers are available upon request from staff in the clerk's office. Please ensure that all cell phones are turned off or placed on silent. And are there any members of council who wish to disclose pecuniary interest? So I need to disclose pecuniary interest for agenda item 10.1, council staff report 2019-18. And I declare pecuniary interest in the above noted matter as my father owns lands adjacent to the proposed development. Before we move into regular business, as the vice chair, Councillor Early, is not available for today's meeting, I do need a motion to appoint another member of council as acting vice chair for today's general committee meeting, and I would suggest Mayor Thompson. I need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Rosa, seconded by Councillor Kiernan. All those in favor? Carried. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. I will read out the title associated with the items on the agenda. Members of General Committee may ask that an item be held so it can be further discussed. Please indicate your intention to hold an item by pressing your request to speak button. The first person on the list will be given the opportunity to speak first to that item. If an item is not held, the motion is deemed to be approved on consent. No further discussion of the item will take place at the meeting. The recommendation will go forward to Council for our consideration at the next meeting. Item 3.1, staff report 2019-56, 2019 property tax rates. Approved upon consent. Item 3.2, staff report 2019-71, noise exemption for Cheers Caledon and designation as municipally significant event. No holds, approved upon consent. Item 3.3, confidential staff report 2019-19, held by Mayor Thompson. Item 6.1, staff report 2019-63, 2019 development charges background study and bylaw. Hold by Councillor DeBoer. Item 6.2, staff report 2019-68, 2019 community green fund and recommendations. Seeing no holds, approved upon consent. Item 6.3, staff report 2019-52, feasibility study for the reuse of the historic Alton School. Hold by Councillor St. Clair. 7.1, accessibility advisory committee report dated May 6, 2019. No holds, approved upon consent. 7.2, request for universal signage. Hold by Mayor Thompson. Item 8.1, notice of motion regarding access to cannabis for medical purposes. No. Oh, Councillor Kiernan, you want to hold it? Okay. Item 8.2, notice of motion regarding all-day street parking one-year pilot program held by Mayor Thompson. Item 8.3, notice of motion regarding illegal dumping. Held by Mayor Thompson. Item 8.4, notice of motion regarding alternate member to Regional Council. No holds, approved upon consent. Item 10.1, confidential staff report 2019-18, a proposed or pending disposition of lands by the municipality proposed to purchase land from the Town Triple Crown Line Development Incorporated. Held by Councillor DeBoer. The next item on the agenda is delegations. Over the weekend, a number of delegation requests were received, and due to Holiday Monday, there was no addendum to include in the delegations. In order to hear the delegations, I require a motion to waive Section 8.9 of the procedural bylaw to permit an emergency delegation to be heard. And so the motion that I have before me is that Section 8.9 of the procedural bylaw be waived to permit emergency delegation to be heard by Mr. Pete Shute regarding staff report 2019-63, 2019 development charges, background study, and bylaw, and Ms. Sherry Brioche, Mr. Rob Mazzapelli, and Mr. James Jenkins regarding all-day street parking one-year pilot program Queen Street notice of motion. Moved by Councillor Rosa, seconded by Mayor Thompson. All those in favor? Carried. So then I will invite Mr. Pete Shute. Senior Vice President Brookfield Holmes to give a delegation regarding staff report 2019-63, 2019 development charges background study and bylaw. Please note that in accordance with our procedural bylaw, you are permitted 10 minutes for your delegation.
Good afternoon. Set up here. Okay, Chair Innes and members of committee, my name is Pete Shute, and I'm with Brookfield Residential, and specifically in this case, Brookfield Residential Ontario Bolton Limited. And I'm here this afternoon to make committee aware of a proposed change to your development charge bylaw, which would have a significant impact on our mid-rise residential development proposal at 50 Ann Street. And many other residential development proposals likely in the Bolton business improvement area over time. I'm also here to request committee's consideration to ensure that redevelopment proposals within the Bolton BIA, both residential and non-residential in nature, and including a proposal at 50 Ann, continue to be eligible for the exemption of the local component of the development charge levy as is the current situation. I was originally going to address Planning and Development Committee this evening and may still, depending on how things go, as a staff report recommending enactment of our zoning bylaw amendment application is going forward for consideration on that agenda. However, after speaking with Town Clerk on Friday, we determined that it would be probably more appropriate probably more appropriate to address my concerns with committee of the whole this afternoon as they relate largely to the recommendations in your updated 2019 development charge background study, specifically as it relates to the recommendation of abandoning your current exemption of the local development charge levy for residential development applications within the Bolton BIA. Last week, I filed a letter in support of our development proposal at 50 Ann Street, which expressed concern with both the recommendation to eliminate the development charge exemption for the Bolton BIA and with the Town of Caledon's current cash in lieu of parking fee structure. As part of my request for consideration, I outlined a chronology of how long we've been working on a redevelopment application at 50 Ann, a process which now has us into our fifth year. Back in 2014-2015, when we were considering investing at 50 Ann, we met on several occasions with Caledon staff and members of council as part of our overall due diligence efforts for the proposal. On those occasions, the exemption of the local component of the development charge levy for the Bolton BIA was highlighted as a strong indication of the town's support for redevelopment opportunities and investment in Bolton's downtown core, and specifically as one of the reasons to invest in Bolton for companies like ours. Further, it was highlighted at that time that one of the reasons the town originally created the development charge exemption for the Bolton BIA was to help offset some of the cost risks typically experienced during infill redevelopment projects, like the cost of brownfields remediation and environmental cleanup, which has definitely been a cost burden to our project. In general, our redevelopment proposal efforts to date at 50 Ann have been a challenge. Time, process, surprises have all factored into what's become a very expensive venture for us. And while the constraints of the property, being height restrictions, density restrictions, and groundwater conditions, have all made it difficult to create enough critical mass for the project to absorb some of these challenges. To hear now, after we spent the last 2 years cleaning up the site, and now that we're finally coming forward with a positive staff report for committee's consideration of approval, that we're at the risk of losing the development charge exemption is something very difficult for us to accept. In our view, the development charge exemption was a commitment made by the town when we started this process, and it was fundamental in our decision to invest in Bolton and acquire the site at 50 Ann Street. We also feel strongly that our proposal is exactly what the town was looking for when we initiated discussions years ago, and it's exactly the type of proposal that Bolton needs as far as both investment in its downtown core and the opportunity to create a range of new housing options for the residents of Bolton and Caledon at large. As such, we respectfully request that committee work to keep the opportunity for local development charge exemptions for both residential and non-residential development proposals within the Bolton BIA, contrary to what is currently being recommended by your consultant in the background study. It's crucial not only for the economic viability of our project, but also to encourage additional future investment in Bolton. When we add the risk of the current DC proposal in your background study to other significant municipal fees, such as cash in lieu of parking and cash in lieu of park land, for which we're also requesting consideration, it places severe limitations on projects like ours going forward in the future. Thank you for your consideration, and please to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Do I have any questions for members of council? Seeing none, thank you very much for your delegation.
Thank you for your time.
I will now call upon Ms. Sherry Broche to give a delegation regarding all-day street parking, one-year pilot program, Queen Street. Notice of motion. I know I don't have to tell you, but please note that in accordance, you have 10 minutes under the procedural bylaw.
Thank you, Chair Innes. Good afternoon, Chair Innes, council staff, members of the public. My name is Sherry Broche, and I'm a resident of Caledon. I did attend the meeting at the Albion Bolton Community Centre last August, September, and spoke publicly about this. It was hosted by the Region of Peel. The public had their opportunity to ask questions. I listened to everyone. There was a lot of good news and a lot of not-so-good news. It was me that asked for this pilot project. I am happy to see the request is being brought forward. Thank you, Mayor Thompson. However, I have a bit of some concerns with this motion. I called Councillor Rosa asking if he knew any details of the pilot project. The answer I received, unfortunately, he had no idea of the details. I then called Councillor Groves and asked about if she knew anything about the details, and unfortunately, I discovered that she did not know either. It saddens me that the team playing and that my two councillors didn't know anything about this pilot project. I support the pilot project. I wouldn't have asked for it if I didn't. I had to check the agenda two or three times to see if I was missing something. I saw zero guidelines to this pilot project, zero criteria, zero measurables. So my question is exactly what are we trying to achieve here? What is the plan? Are we just going to take down the signs of the actual timed parking that's there now and just wing it? Because if this is the case, I'm sorry, but I cannot support the pilot project. I really want to see this work. I want to see the data, and I'm sure everybody else does. And let the data speak for yourself. Thirdly, if I may make a suggestion, there is huge safety concerns down there. I'm down there a lot. I go through town all the time. Sorry, Councillor Innes. I have a couple of councillors that I don't mean to be rude, but I did take time to come. So I stand here today, let's send everybody a strong message in our community. There is speeding that is going down there. And there's also trucks that are still going through our downtown core. So if I may make a suggestion, please, for a short-term fix until we figure out what we're doing with this pilot project and the plan, is to ask our OPP to do some speed blitzes. Get them down there. Get the radar going. Let's send a message to everyone. Sometimes when you hit them in the pocketbook, it actually hurts them. The trucks. I am very aware, as long as everybody else is aware, that there is going to be truck deliveries down there. I spoke to Councillor Rosa about this, and I said we need to come up with something that's going to identify them. So we're not seeing these trucks go down the hill, through the core, back up. Unfortunately, a GPS is going to take you up Highway 50. It's not going to take you up the bypass, and it's not going to take you up the Albion Vaughan Line. Well, first of all, I think anything north of the Albion Vaughan Line at King, you're not allowed to do heavy trucks, but I could be wrong. We need to partnership up. And if I may ask Mayor Thompson, also, let's send a strong message to the industry. Going through no truck routes, maybe you could help us through AMO. I'm sure there's other communities in the province of Ontario that are dealing with this as well. Let's work together collaboratively. Let's send a message. When there's a no-truck route, that's what it means, a no-truck route. The sense of entitlement is what the problem is, it's attitude. And unfortunately, the drivers are the ones that are behind the wheel controlling the vehicle. We can only educate as people and you as council, but we can also enforce it. We have the means to enforce it. So I'm going to ask, please, let's partnership up with the OPP and let's get some radar blitzes going on. I have noticed, though, recently, there's some public pictures going on, and plus the Bolton Master Transportation Plan, the cycling is going to be implemented. I love this idea. Cycling is a massive part of my world. For those that know me, my son races at a national level and an international level. I help run massive events, like 6,000 people at these events. I understand the risk management, and I also understand the safety management. But what I have a really hard time with this is if we don't have barriers down there to protect our cyclists and we have parking, which I'm okay with, as long as the pilot information comes back okay, when we don't know that because we don't have a plan, when you open the car door, is that person going to look in that rearview mirror if that cyclist is coming up and bam, now you got an accident? So traffic count, I know there's parameters. I learned this through the cycling task force that if a certain amount of traffic is going to be on a specific road, then it warrants a certain amount of barriers. So I would ask that that be looked into as well. There's a lot. I did sit on the cycling task force, and I was super excited that this happened. Councillor Innes was the one who initiated it, and I can't tell you, we accomplished a lot in a very short period of time and very minimal money. We even won bronze at the bike summit for Share the Road. It's most definitely a step in the right direction. But I will never, ever support cycling down there right now. Even if you have all-day parking, you cannot, it's too busy. I'm hoping the achievement, and I don't know that, we don't have the data, is to take them off a little bit. But until we get that data, we can't implement the cycling part of it. I heard loud and clear at this meeting on August, September, 95% of do not support the all-day parking. And I also heard the concerns of people who do. Our businesses, our residents that are down there. So I'm going to ask, and I'm going to stand here today to please ask council, let's come up with a plan. Let's come up with a criteria. I'd be happy, along with fire, paramedics, OPP, local businesses, and residents, to get at the table to come up with the questions and what we're trying to achieve here. Please remember, this is a highway, it's not a street. And again, like I said, the GPS will take you through this. Lastly, I know together we can make a difference. We will some way, somehow, make that downtown core safe and vibrant again. It was vibrant years ago. Let's try to do it again. I'm totally on board with it. I am empathetic to those businesses down there, and I'm also empathetic to the residents. In closing, I'd like to thank Councillor Rosa for hearing my concern and being extremely creative with me and coming up with some new ideas in regards to the measurables. I will let Councillor Rosa address this. To council as a whole, the pilot project is a good thing, but when there's no plan, it is not a good decision to implement. Please consider my suggestions as well from the safety perspective in a short-term fix, and then let's work on the questions and the criteria and the plan for the pilot project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Birch. Is there any questions?
It's probably one of my quickest delegations.
It is. You finished in under 10 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will now call upon Mr. Rob Mezzapelli to give a delegation regarding the all-day street parking one-year pilot program Queen Street notice of motion. You already know the procedure by law.
I know the deal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Innes and members of committee. I do have some photos I'd like to put on the overhead, so I'm wondering if I can sit there and use that mic, if
sure.
That'd be okay?
Yep.
Thanks. Thanks again, Chair Innes, and members of committee for having me and allowing me the permission to delegate. I know it required a vote of council, and I thank you for that. I'll be honest, I didn't have a whole lot of time to do this, so it's really chicken scratch on my part, and I just hope I can explain and kind of expand on these points. I do know the subject matter quite well and have some illustrative pieces to kind of go along with it, so I'm hoping it's helpful. I am a resident of Bolton for about 25 years, member of council representing Bolton as the area councillor from 2010 to 14. Also, relatedly, I'm a professional firefighter in the City of Toronto for 25 years and have driven the big red trucks for over 20. So I bring that with me and I offer it to you for your consideration. The first thing I want to start with is this is not just about parking. And that's the key thing, although the title of it is All Day Parking. This isn't just about parking. It is, but it's also what this may lead to. And further in my delegation, you get the visuals of what, as Ms. Brioche said, could be the vibrant new look and feel of the core. I want to kind of break my presentation down into three parts: the realities of the core today, what's happened, the pros and cons of the returning, and it's important to note this is a return of all-day parking, and then addressing some of the concerns that have been raised with respect to all-day parking. I want to first say that I am putting my absolute support behind Mayor Thompson's motion. I think it's paramount that the pilot be a full 12 months so that we can see every season, as well as to give ample time for the impacts and the benefits to be realized, to be captured and reported back to council for your consideration. I know the next delegate owns Happy Days, and that's a seasonal business, so we want to make sure that all businesses have absolute ability to participate, as well as capturing the traffic, the public's comments, and so on and so forth. So what does Bolton look like now? It's a four-lane cross-section. I will disagree respectfully with Ms. Brioche on one thing. This is Queen Street we're looking at. Although it is the same road as Highway 50, it is Queen Street in this section. And in this section where it is called Queen Street, it has a very different look, feel, form, and function. And I think looking at the photos, it makes it very apparent. It's a very tight configuration, historical core. You got commercial, residential. That is the look of the core today. And the photo shows, you know, the four-lane cross-section and the very narrow public boulevard, which is a key constraint in this area, which leads to some of the safety concerns. I will note, too, that there are a lot of sensitive land uses in the area. There is older adult living at River's Edge. You had Mr. Shutt here. Talking about potential for 50 Ann Street, which is a great, development. I hope it goes forward. We have a nursing home. We have probably what I would suggest to you is the greatest concentration of pedestrian movements in all of Bolton, if not Caledon. I feel confident in saying that. A popular destination for students. We have a heritage pavilion, a gazebo. All of this makes this a well-attended and utilize space, again, in very tight parameters. Some of the improvements that have... Other realities that are in place are some of the things that you've heard. And very quickly, some of the incidents that have happened. This is at Stern and Queen. I believe there was three accidents within 5 days, if I remember correctly. This is one where the vehicle went between the light standard or the traffic light in a building. There were two girls that were there. The news article talks about that they just avoid being hit. I spoke to someone who was there. They were actually touched by that vehicle. And we can only imagine if that was anything more serious, what might have resulted. And none of us here would like that. This is probably one of the more graphic ones. This is looking north on Queen Street, just north of King. This is the east side. I will note that vehicle that the dump truck hit was parked. And if it were not for that parked vehicle, that dump truck would have moved much further off the road. Here's just a couple of the most recent news articles. There's that photo again. This is from the Enterprise. And one other one. I was even surprised by this, 53 collisions in 3 years. That is a very serious and concerning statistic. I think we would all have a vested interest in seeing reduced. What improvements have been made in the core? And I'm thankful that there has been some along this path of making downtown Bolton a better, safer place. We've banned trucks on King and Queen, which is a fabulous thing for downtown Bolton. And that is the result of the Bolton Bypass, which you can see here at Mayfield. Where's my finger? Running up and then coming up around the roundabout at James Dip right there. That is the bypass for out-of-town commuters who are not intending to stop in Bolton, but to travel straight through it. I have taken this personally in afternoon rush hour, and each and every time it was quicker than going through Queen Street. So for those where time is of essence in commuting, the bypass has been proven, certainly in my personal experience, to be a more efficient way to get around Bolton. There's a neat little thing that a lot of people don't realize, and this was something I spoke to when the Queen Street project was done in 2017 by the Region Appeal. If you look right here, this is Stern and Queen, and right across from Stern, there's a section here that there's no parking permitted, and it serves as a little bypass for if you're turning to go into Stern to go to Timmy's or what have you, assuming the lineup's not too long to turn left, cars that are going north can continue to pass around, which in effect keeps traffic flowing. That we didn't have before. And that's a tiny little inclusion that helps in a little way in making this area flow and function better. We've removed the traffic lights at Mill and moved them up to Hickman, so there's a shorter or a longer distance between lights. It used to be between Mill and King, and now it's Hickman and King. So there's a larger section between traffic lights, which is a good thing. Another thing that most people don't realize is, and I only realized it when I visited the Region Appeal, is they have a Caledon Traffic, got to get it right, Management Center, where in real time they can monitor what's happening at the core and actually adjust things so that it can adapt and make that area function better. That is a great feature that is in place in real time, day in, day out, and is of benefit to everybody who is in that area. Another thing with the opening of the Emil Kolb Parkway is, and it's difficult to believe, but it is true because the numbers don't lie, the volume of traffic on Queen Street, this is Region Appeal data, the volume of traffic on Queen Street, which is the top chart, the line indicates the implementation of the parkway, has actually gone down to numbers that we haven't seen since 2011. The Emil Kolb Parkway, which I do not have a graphic for, conversely has gone up in usage. The overall north-south traffic has gone up over time, certainly, but actually on Queen Street, it has gone down because it is splintered off onto the bypass, which makes more volume, or sorry, more capacity on Queen Street, which is of a benefit. Trucks are largely, not entirely, but largely off of Queen Street. And it's important when you talk about the volumes coming down on Queen Street, when you add into that the fact that most trucks are out, that is an added feature that is worth more than just one vehicle. You know, anybody stuck behind a truck, it is a lot different than being stuck behind a car. So having the trucks out, having the volume down together has created a much needed benefit on Queen Street.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Mr. President, do you have much more? Because I can do it. We can ask for an extension.
I am going to whip through it as quick as I can. If okay. I can just ask for council's permission, I will do my best. I didn't time it. Sorry.
Okay.
Am I okay to keep going?
Yeah. You okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it. One thing that did happen in 2017 for 8 months, which is notable, from March to October, is the region was in there doing work. They did so water main replacement, road rehabilitation, and the bridge was rehabilitated over the Humber River. One thing I looked at during that time was what were the impacts on Queen Street, particularly during rush hour. And I was pleased to see that the what I expect to see isn't what I actually saw. The queuing, the additional queuing, was less than I expected. I actually consulted with the project manager for that project, and he too indicated that he observed the same thing, which to me means people were being moved over to the bypass, which is what we want people to do to utilize that. The bypass is quicker. As I said, I've taken it a number of times myself. Queen Street has 13 traffic lights and one pedestrian crossing between the roundabout and Mayfield. The Emerald Cove Parkway has 5 traffic lights and one level crossing, railroad crossing. As I said, every time I've used it, I have had better time. So the pros and cons of the all-day parking, quickly. There are two that I know. One is traffic flow through the core and people being stuck in congestion. I want to say that I appreciate that concern, and it's certainly one that resonates with me. The second is, and again, another one that resonates, is emergency response time through the core. Those are the two that stand out to me personally. And the pros, very quickly, I understand that this will make the downtown a safer place, a more inviting place. The ability to create a space that is business, pedestrian, cyclist friendly for shoppers, shop owners, residents, all who congregate there. And I think everybody here would want to see a better place for all of those people. We want to make Bolton a place to come to, not to drive through. And that is my vision for Bolton. What you are talking about today is supported by a number of studies, the Bolton Transportation Master Plan, now the Caledon Transportation Master Plan, Queen Street Corridor Study, Bolton Heritage Conservation District, and others. I have been a part of all those studies. I have spoken to people, been part of groups that are interested in what's happening downtown, and I believe we can create that space down there that we all believe would be a better place. So very quickly, just to address those concerns, the congestions in the commute. This is an interesting graphic that I think is illustrative. Kind of hard to see, but there is a yellow and a blue circle. That's the current queuing. As it stands today during the rush hour in the afternoon, which is 36.5 seconds to get through that. The green and the red is what is the modeling shows will be the queuing post all-day parking, which is, it's a little fuzzy, 82 seconds. And that is the distance of the queuing. And again, this is something that was shared by the project manager observing what happened during construction in 2017. The other concern is, I just want to say, that's what the modeling shows. And in 2017, when the work actually happened, that was actually replicated in real life by personal observation from the project manager and certainly myself, who was looking for that. The last concern is response times by emergency services. I share this as someone in the profession. One thing I think to keep in mind is that is a very important piece of the pie, is response times, but so too is the safety of the area as a whole. And I think everybody would believe, including our emergency services, that if we create a safer place, we will create a place that there will be fewer accidents, less severe to respond to begin with, which was certainly a goal that we would all share. And outside of this particular area, and I want to say the parking is 170 meters. From Mayfield to the roundabout at James Dick is 8 kilometers. So for every car we push onto the bypass, although there may be congestion in the core over that 170 meters, the balance of that 8 kilometers would be less congested. So on your commute through that entire area, although you may have a pinch point to make it slower and controlled, your commute actually will be more effective outside of that. And that point resonates too with the emergency services. Responding through that area, they will have better response times outside that 170 meters as more people are pushed over onto the bypass. So for these reasons, I give my full support to the motion as is, and I really hope council supports this. I would really love to see this implemented. I believe in my heart that it will prove to be successful and that this can be the launch pad for where we can get to the ultimate vision. And for me, I would love if we could get our downtown core to look anything like that. It is more inviting, and we'll create that invigorating, vibrant space for shop owners, pedestrians, multiple modal users, and it will be a welcoming place.
I have to ask you to wrap up.
So that is it for myself, and I would be happy to entertain questions.
Are there any questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Mazzali.
Thank you for your time.
I will now call upon Mr. James Jenkins to give delegation regarding all-day street parking one-year pilot program Queen Street Notice of Motion. And in accordance with our procedural bylaw, you are permitted 10 minutes for your delegation.
Thank you. Small business owner in downtown Bolton. I own Happy Days, located at 5 Queen Street, not Highway 50, but we are addressed as of Queen Street. We've been down... The store has been around since 2008. I've owned it since 2012. We did move closer to the corner, and as you saw in some of the pictures that Rob presented, one of the pictures depicted two trucks, and one of them, unfortunately, was in the front of a building, which is now my store. So it is quite possible that if it had been at the time when it was Happy Days, anybody's children could have been out front. It could have been anybody at all. The other picture that was depicted from Rob was the car that was wedged in between the building and the light standard. One of the young ladies that was involved in it is one of my employees. Little disheartening when I found that out. We're a little family business down there. Everybody's kids come. We don't need to make Bolton safer. We need to make it safer. We don't want to make it safer. We need to. Everybody is down there. When we're busy, the sidewalks are packed. This is what we want. We want people out walking in downtown Bolton, looking around, window shopping, grabbing an ice cream, grabbing a coffee, spending some time in downtown Bolton, enjoying themselves, walking around, taking a walk along the river, doing what you want to do, and not have to feel worried that anything at any time could happen. Not that it's just downtown Bolton, it can happen anywhere, but it just seems that downtown Bolton is far too fast. I spend a lot of my days out there. I spend a lot of time talking with customers in front of the store, and I see it all the time with people. Just the shenanigans with the way people drive. It's a me society. Everybody has to get from point A to point B in as fast as they can. And it doesn't matter what happens, how they do it, they just do it. Going back to, and I'm going to say 2015, 2016, Councillor Innes was in my store with her kids, and she didn't want to let them outside. She was too, and if I remember, they were not sidewalk-friendly kids. And I mean, your kids are from Farm County, but, you know, it's, I know our sidewalks are small. It is what it is. We can't change anything, except we can put that buffer of parked cars along the street, that It's not about parking. It's about making everybody safer. I would rather see a kid have fun in front of my store and turn around and accidentally bump into a car that's parked than to accidentally step off the curb into a live lane of traffic. It's that much safer when you have cars parked. Every chance I get that when I'm in when I'm at work and I know we're not busy or that we are going to get busy, I'll park my vehicle out front. I will create that buffer because it just makes me feel that much safer. Parents feel safer. Parents, I've had too many, as of late, parents come in and say, grab an ice cream and say, let's go right back to the car and let's go home. Eat our ice cream at home. They don't want to hang out. People don't want to stay in town and enjoy it. They want to grab their ice cream and go. It's when I was at 33, we had a nice little patio out front. It was a lot safer. Unfortunately, I did have to move a lot closer to the corner, and it not as kid-friendly as I would like it to be. So just to wrap it up, I mean, we need to make downtown Bolton safer. We can make it that much better. We can get people walking around. You have more people walking down. They'll see a business that unfortunately is gone, but they'll look at it and see a potential of, I had a business idea. Maybe we can put that into work. But people don't want, right now from what I see, to open a business in downtown Bolton because there is no pedestrian traffic down there. We've lost too many businesses as of late. There's not much in the way of little mom-pa stores downtown, and that's what we need to bring back. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Jenkins? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
With staff's permission, or sorry, with council's permission, we'd like to bring forward the DC charge quickly, just because there are a lot of staff that do have other things. Sorry? Everybody has spoken for delegations. Okay. Can I get approval for that? Yes, thank you. So I'll call upon Ms. Hillary Bryars, Deputy Treasurer of Finance and Infrastructure Services, to approach the podium to provide a presentation concerning the development charges background study and bylaw.
Thank you. Today we'll be providing a brief update on the 2019 Town of Caledon Development Charges Background Study and Bylaw. Refinements to the Development Charges Background Study and Bylaw have been made following the March 22nd Background Study release and its proposed bylaw. These refinements are the results of comments received by the various stakeholder groups, including the April 23rd public meeting. Any comments that were received following the report deadline are not contained in the report, but have been provided to Council today and will be included in the circulated Council agenda for next week. Staff will also be providing written responses to these latest comments. Staff Report 2019-63 presented today outlines the policy modifications made from the March 22, 2019 draft DC study that have been incorporated into the amended background study. The amended background study is found in Schedule A to today's report. These changes are minor and have no impact on the proposed rates. The calculated non-residential development charge is $5.13 per square foot of total floor area. The current rate in place for non-residential DCs in Caledon is $3.80 per square foot. The calculated rate for a single-family detached home is set to increase from $26,000 to $29,927. The rate paid by townhomes is increasing from $21,819 to $22,784 per dwelling. And the rates for apartments are actually decreasing over the previous rates. These are the same rates that were presented to Council on March 22nd. Here are the changes in rates on a service level basis. The majority of the increase of DC rates is to support capital costs for services related to a highway, roads, road operations, and recreation facilities. These increases will support new growth throughout the town, including in Mayfield West and Bolton, and are an integral part to supporting the town's 10-year capital program for growth-related infrastructure. $26,000 of development charges are collected for a single-family dwelling. This slide shows how the amount is allocated to the reserves used to fund future capital projects. Residential development charges differ depending on the type of home being built. However, the types of projects funded from these development charges are within the same proportions. The majority of the current residential development charge goes towards funding the town's growth-related roads program at 51% of the charge. Next is the funding of indoor recreation facilities and new parks and trail development to support growth throughout the town, followed by needed road operations capital projects such as a new works yard and equipment and vehicles needed to service new streets. As noted earlier, there is no change from the March 22nd rates. The increase for a single-family detached home is $3,839, as shown on the slide, and the increase to the non-res rate is $1.33 per square foot. New proposed policy changes for the 2019 DC bylaw from the 2014 study include the elimination of mandatory legal agreements required to support DC exemption programs, the inclusion of cannabis-related processing facilities as non-residential development, new definitions for stacked townhomes and back-to-back townhomes. Stacked townhomes would have been treated as will be treated as large apartments, whereas in the 2014 study, these would have been included as other residential dwellings, such as townhomes. New treatment of nursing homes and special care residences as residential development, and clarification that the non-statutory development charge exemption for the Bolton BIA and Caledon East Commercial Core are for non-residential development. All non-statutory exemptions Council includes in the development charges bylaw must be funded from another non-DC source, such as property taxation. As such, it's important that the DC exemption maintain not only its affordability to the town, but to support the town's strategic goals. Not listed on this slide was also the proposal to include an expiry on redevelopment credits in order to provide timely redevelopment of demolished sites. This is consistent with our benchmarking of other municipalities, and this change to redevelopment credits also includes a grandfathering clause, whereas previously demolished sites would begin their eligibility for the credit starting from the date of the new bylaw. The DC background study and proposed bylaw presented to Council today includes a number of refinements. These refinements are based on the feedback provided to the town through not only April 23rd public meeting that was held, but also written submissions made by stakeholders. These submissions and the town's responses have been included in the staff report as Schedule C. Late submissions have been distributed today to Council and will also be included in next week's Council agenda. Through consideration of the feedback provided, the following refinements have been made to the proposed bylaw. The timeline for redevelopment credit eligibility has now been extended by 5 years. A credit will be provided up to 10 years following the demolition of a residential property and up to 15 years following the demolition of a non-residential property. The growing of cannabis is now proposed to be treated like other crops and will be exempt from development charges. The processing, production, hydroponics, and sale of cannabis will not be an allowable on-farm diversified use. This is to ensure equity between these types of developments and those located in industrial areas. In addition, the current DC rates will remain in effect until June 25, 2019, which is the expiry of our current bylaw. The Development Charges Act also provides for a process that the town must follow in order to pass a new DC background study, bylaw, and rates. Following the passing of the new DC bylaw, there's a 40-day appeal period in which anyone can appeal the town's new DC bylaw. And the town must issue a notice of passage stating the end of the appeal period, not later than 20 days after we pass the bylaw, and make available a development charges pamphlet outlining the new bylaw. This concludes my overview.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. I'm going to bring forward staff report 2019-63, 2019 development charge background study and bylaw. And then that way council can ask their questions. I just need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Rosa, seconded by Councillor Mary Thompson. And the item was actually held by Councillor DeBoer, so he can go first.
Thank you. With the removal of the BIA and the Caledon East Core and moving it to just for commercial, I thought when we initially started talking about it, we wanted to look at mixed use and the exemption for mixed use. Am I recalling that incorrectly then now?
Through you, Councillor Chair Innes, to Councillor DeBoer. My recollection is when the exemption was originally introduced into the DC bylaw a number of years ago, the intention was that it was specified for mixed-use properties. So there was an idea that you would have ground floor commercial units, and then you would also allow them to build an apartment or two above the unit in order to help like further their business model and support business growth within downtown Bolton. I know within our community improvement plan, there is a credit available to mixed-use development as well.
Because if you were doing a redevelopment, you would take down, for example, if you use a Caledon East, you took down the commercial building, you would get credit for the commercial building that came down, so that would exempt the large portion of the commercial that was coming into play, and then the discount was for the residential component of it afterwards.
So with redevelopment, there is a separate and distinct credit within the DC bylaw that does allow for a credit of if you took down a commercial building, part of that you could credit over to building a residential building, and vice versa. If you took down a home and put up a business, you would get a credit for part of that home towards what your DCs are payable for the business property.
Okay, because and I know that over the years, it's been explained to us a lot better in the sense that the DCs, when we grant an exemption, it isn't a true exemption. It ends up being that we actually pay for it, or the rest of the taxpayers pay for and pick up the difference. So it's important that we think about the benefits, and I do think that there's still a benefit to communities in general in supporting the redevelopment, especially in the business cores. Like here in Caledon East right now, we had a building come down, and yet it hasn't moved to the next step. Now, and I see 15 years on commercial, right, to carry the demolition credits forward. I'm glad to see this 15 years because if we didn't carry the credits a bit of a distance down, when the building gets to where it needs to be taken down, I think if there wasn't the credits and having them held on for a length of time, the people would probably, or the developers would probably try and keep the building there longer, and we would have the problem of going in an unsafe building and doing orders on them to try and maintain a property reasonable. So I think that's a good part to have within the DCs, but I still think that there's some merit to supporting the concept of exemptions within the core, wanting to develop and wanting to get people within the core and start having some redevelopment if it's done with the heritage and done with a certain criteria. So I would like to see what my colleagues speak to and have their comments, but I still have concerns in that area. I think the rest of everything else is here is quite supportable, and I think we are moving forward as council and as the community. I guess we got to work at slowly weaning ourselves off of the credits that we gave years ago, had we understood where they really came from originally, or how they get dealt with completely, right? So thanks, and I know this isn't the most fun doing this kind of the DC report every 5 years, but it's something that we have to do, and it does kind of shape things, so thanks.
Thank you. Mayor Thompson.
Well, first of all, Hillary, I want to say thank you. And going to the report, it's on page 9 of 16. And thank you for finding something for cannabis production. I appreciate that. The one thing for wedding barns for bona fide farmers, you guys didn't find any latitude on that one?
Through you, Chair Innes, to Mayor Thompson, what we want to do is make sure that our non-discretionary exemptions that have to be funded from the property tax base or another source of non-DC funds are equitable. So when you're looking at a business like a wedding venue, they tend to generate traffic. They tend to, you know, impact our road infrastructure in terms of wear and tear. And you want to maintain equity between that type of business and another type of business that's similar that would be located in a more fitting area, like a commercial or an industrial area. So you want to maintain equity between your similar businesses. You want to make sure that your exemption program through your non-statutory exemptions maintains its affordability, which may mean reviewing each exemption very carefully before council consents to it. And it also means kind of benchmarking with other municipalities. So traditionally, a wedding venue is not seen as something that's typical in other municipalities similar to ours as a non-discretionary exemption.
And there's no other way to put it in a lower rate category?
No, there would not be.
Okay. Another one is the opposition to the proposed time limit for DC redevelopment credits. Request for transition period. And where I'm going with this is we're finally seeing some redevelopment opportunities happening to Calanese, but especially in Bolton. Bolton's been a long time, hard nut to crack. And I think we're seeing, and I think you've heard Mr. Shute speak, but I think that's just one of many applications we got underway. And when you're doing redevelopment, you do not know if you're getting in contaminated land. There's costs. And to get people to do redevelopments is a challenge. So, Madam Chair, I would like to bring forward a motion, if I could, to the bylaw, and so that I can bring discussion about it for council. I think I better do it that way.
Yep.
So, are we able to post that, or do you want me to just read it?
Yeah. I just need a mover and a seconder.
Okay. Well, I'll gladly move it, but.
By Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Kiernan.
Do you want me to read it, or do you want to?
Yeah. Yep. If you can read it.
The proposed development charges bylaw attached as Schedule B to staff report 2019-63 be amended to include an exemption for residential development within the downtown Bolton Business Improvement Area and the Calanese Commercial Core for residential building permits issued or before May 28, 2021. Approximately 24 months following the passage of this bylaw. And I think it allows those people that have got the investments to keep them going, or if they're hesitating, get going. And maybe this is one way we can give a shot in the arm to both Bolton and Calden East. I'll turn it over for other people
to
speak on it.
Councillor Sinclair, did you want to speak to the amendment, or was it to the main motion as a whole?
I'm speaking to the amendment.
Okay, so I'm going to clear the board. Are there any other speakers to the amendment? Okay, I'm just going to add and follow up that Councillor DeBoer already outlined that some of the challenges that we face, in particular in Caledon East and in Bolton, because of historical buildings or properties, because of conservation regulations and challenges, it becomes it very difficult for people to want to make that investment into those areas because it's going to cost them more money than it would to develop somewhere else. It's a challenging configuring of the sites, whether they're talking about downtown Caledon East or they're talking about downtown Bolton, like Mr. Shute delegated today. So I support what Mayor Thompson has brought forward in this amendment because I think that we really do need to find creative ways to attract investment into those areas because that is really the only way that those cores are going to be revitalized, along with making sure that they're pedestrian friendly and making sure that we're doing programming and event spacing and promoting tourism and bringing people into those cores, because that's what's going to support the businesses that are there. So I support the amendment because I think that some of those sites are well under the way in the process. Some of them have just started to have communications with council and staff, and we need to give them some encouragement because some of those cores have been sitting like that for quite some time. So I fully support the amendment, and thank you, Mayor Thompson, for bringing that forward. Councillor DeBoer.
I think it's important to talk about what we want to encourage, and I think this is an opportunity to encourage it. If this does pass, I know that we've got Mr. Shute here to discuss it, but I think I received a letter, and I believe it didn't get included within the information package from Humphreys Planning Group. They were Mark Kansian, I guess, his development. Is there an opportunity that you could meet with them to discuss this change if it does happen to be successful? I think it's important to communicate with them to explain this and actually maybe even find out what their concerns are with the changes. Is there an opportunity that staff can do it? I wouldn't maybe put it as a motion, but I would just ask that it be direction. That
yes, staff is more than willing to meet with anyone who has questions about this amendment or the DC bylaw.
Okay. I understand what we're trying to do, and I think it's just, you know, do we try and encourage for a little while longer some of the redevelopment that's happening? And I think that's where I would probably support the amendment in just trying to, you know, we've got a good thing going in Bolton. We haven't got it in Caledon East, and I doubt we'll have anything in 24 months. So, but if there is a sunshine clause on the whole thing, well, maybe we'll see something happen a little bit quicker. Thank you.
Thank you. And then maybe just to take that one step further, I think it would be helpful for staff to actually send a notice out to those property owners within that core, in those areas, to say, this is a present situation. If this is granted, so that maybe it lights a little bit of a fire or gives them a little bit of incentive to continue to move forward. Some of them are very incentivized anyways, others are not. So I think that this could be helpful. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair. I'm supportive of, in principle, of the idea that we need to be open and flexible in pursuing initiatives that help revitalize and bring businesses into our cores. It pulls a parallel for me because we have a shrinking egg sector. I actually just came from the Golden Horseshoe Food and Farming Alliance, and Peel is at the very bottom of the list in terms of numbers of active farms. And so I would, where I appreciate this and what it's doing, and I support it, I think that we also need to recognize that we have to put the same level of support towards on-farm diversified use and those businesses as well. So you're like, if we're supporting businesses all around and redeveloping our areas, we need to look at all of them.
Thank you. Councillor Rosa.
So I fully support Mayor Thompson's motion, especially because it focuses on revitalization and redevelopment, which is very important. I also agree with Councillor Innes that if we are going to move forward with this, that it needs to be very well communicated to those who have current applications on the table, because there is a deadline, and I think it's very important that we don't miss anyone and that everyone be given an opportunity here. So I really want to make sure that that's communicated to all. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair. I'm going to echo what Councillor Downey said and bring it back to what Mayor Thompson brought up originally with the wedding barns and those kind of facilities, which we can, you know, encourage, you know, the farms to stay in operation with an alternate use, to stay as farmland, even when not farmed, to stay as agricultural land that can broaden out their uses. So I would like to see discussion come back with that, whether it be some kind of reduced fee or something. I think it's important, and I have to come back to what the mayor said, and I'd like to bring that back to staff as well. I would.
So it's before us today. So in order to do that, first we have to finish discussion on this amendment,
right.
And then if you want to make another amendment, you can choose to do so. Okay. Okay. Any other discussion on this amendment? Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Kiernan. All those in favor? Carried. Now back to the main motion as amended. Councillor St. Clair.
It may have been in the report somewhere, but with the additional increases proposed, what would that bring the development charges total to for a single-family dwelling?
Spires. One second. So it's an increase, sorry, through you, Chair Innes, to Councillor Sinclair. It is an increase of $3,789 on the single-family detached, and I'm just finding what the total is. Can you Google that for me, Madam Treasurer? I'll get you the exact number, including the education and the regional portion. So the current total DC charge is $85,258.14, and adding on the increase today for a single-family detached home would be $89,047.14, inclusive of the regional and education portions.
Certainly is expensive. I built my house in 1977, and it was a region appeal levy for $1,250. Thank you.
Thank you, so, Councillor St. Clair. I also wasn't born yet. It's a big difference. Are there any other speakers? Okay, Councillor Kiernan, if you had any amendments or now is the time.
Thank you, Chair Innes. So I'm going to need some assistance probably from the clerk, because I would like to see something come forward. You know, it's important that we support our ag land, especially representing Ward 1, which is, you know, the largest rural area. And, you know, people get upset when they're sold to developers. Well, now we have people that want to utilize these lands for wedding barns and other facilities and other areas, keeping it in a rural agricultural setting. We need to support them.
Why don't I call a five-minute recess? You can have a quick conversation with the clerk, okay?
Thank you.
We will reconvene in 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have an amendment before we move by Councillor Kiernan. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Downey. That the proposed development charges bylaw attached to Schedule B to Staff Report 2019-63 be amended to provide a DZ exemption for on-farm wedding venues that are located on an agricultural property as a secondary use, owned by a bona fide farmer, and operating no more than 30 calendar days per year. It means they have to meet all three of those requirements. There's an actual definition of a bona fide farmer. It's okay. Councillor Kiernan, did you want to speak to it? Okay. Anybody want to speak to it? Councillor DeBoer.
Thank you. I'll support this in this case, this round, but I think what we need to really keep in mind is, and being from the agricultural community, is having a lot of exemptions that become based on the secondary uses, and we end up losing the exemptions that have been long here for the primary uses. If we were to look at the size and the scope of the dairy barns that are built, and if we had to pay development charges based on a square footage on those and the size of the dairy barns, it would be huge. Even if we were just looking at roads and fire and some partial services. So I do get concerned that we end up with more and more being in the area that we are in that become exemptions based on the secondary uses, and that eventually future councils are going to be faced with because of the cost of them, the exemptions that primary agriculture actually has. And the basis for the primary exemptions for primary agriculture is that we don't, or we compete in most cases with producers on the other side of the border. Our grains are priced in Chicago and paying development charges here in Ontario that they don't face in other parts of the world entirely, whereas an on-farm wedding venue will compete against to give two places that would be paying a development charge as the Royal Ambassador and Glen Eagle Golf Course would be required to pay development charges, and they have to base their price of what they charge to use the venue based on those costs, and then, you know, an on-farm exemption just for that case. I think we do have to be very careful in heading down this way because we can potentially lose more for the primary agricultural production group than by and to gain one or two or a couple of wedding venues that put a lot of traffic within our communities and have in the past had a lot of staff resources used to them to manage the noise and traffic and everything that goes with it. So, you know, that is a concern that I have, but I'm willing to support what my colleagues are looking at in trying to make an attempt at, you know, trying to deal with a specific issue and not necessarily a broader philosophy of how to deal with secondary uses on farm and what truly benefits local agriculture and what benefits one application.
Thank you. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chairness. I agree and respect the comments of my colleague. I think in this particular situation, we have a circular difficulty in that our provincial partners have identified the use as on-farm diversified. So it puts us in a bit of a sticky spot. But that being said, I agree that the overarching issue of diversified use throughout our community needs to be really looked at with a lot of detail and work towards a solution that is equitable. So I'll leave it at that. I do support this at this point, but definitely think that there's room for innovation in this area in the ag sector. We have a lot of different ag-related businesses and secondary uses, whether it be production. We have ag research facilities in our area that are running under agricultural exemptions, but have office space and storage and research. So, you know, we definitely need to be looking at the broader picture. So I definitely agree and concur with that. In this particular situation, I think that we have to take the note from our provincial partners, and it's been identified as a diversified use. So I think we don't really have a choice but to support that.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, I do have one. On a proposed property that has a on-farm wedding venue, what are their taxes?
Through you, Chair Innes, to the rest of council and yourself, if you have a commercial wedding venue on an agricultural property, MPAC would assess the property with two components. It would assess a commercial component for the portion that's used commercially, the wedding venue space, and agricultural tax class for the part of the lands that are actively being farmed.
So at what point would the wedding venue space, would it have to be rezoned? Because if it's a barn that they've converted into a wedding venue space.
Through Chair Innes, they would require a building permit for change of use, and that would be triggered through the change of use permit through MPAC.
Okay. So This one's tricky, and I think the reason why a lot of us are conflicted is because there's one individual case which we all feel that there would be justification. I'm more so conflicted because I don't think that that deserves to change the entire development charge bylaw. I would rather see us do an exemption for a particular case as opposed to changing the entire bylaw and permit and encourage more. Because what happens is that we use the development charge bylaw as a tool to encourage the type of development that we want, to discourage the type of development that we don't want. And by changing this, while it's pretty specific and it's going to be very difficult, I don't know why anybody would want to go through the process to change and to pay commercial taxes on a property that they can only use 20 to 30 times a year, but that's albeit themselves. It seems more practical to me that we would give an exemption as opposed to putting something in our bylaw that would actually encourage it for other people. And while the province may deem this as a secondary use, as somebody who's grown up on a farm my entire life, and I have other businesses in my community that do use this as a commercial industrial use, it's very difficult for me to explain where they pay full-on development charges. We had a case in the past year where, not this council, but the former council, basically forced one of those properties to build a new building to deal with bylaw noise issue, and they were there long before the residents around them. And they had to pay full development charges, and they have to pay commercial taxes on it. So it becomes an issue for me. I understand where council wants to go on it, and I support this particular property that we all have issues with, that we see why they should have an exemption. I agree that they should have an exemption. So my question is, can we still do individual exemptions to the bylaw when they delegate council?
Through you, Chair Innes, within the Development Charges Act and as well as the Municipal Act, there's certain provisions for what council can and can't extend to a commercial business. So I would prefer that we review that before committing to a specific grant to a specific business.
It's not a very clear answer. Sorry. Alexis?
Through you, Councillor Innes. My understanding is the development charges has to be done on a basis of class as opposed to individual, so it would be a grant that you would provide as opposed to an exemption.
So it's the same thing as passing this today, basically, just a different way of doing it. You'd be giving an entire class an exemption, not an individual.
Under the Development Charges Act, my understanding is it has to be provided on a class basis.
Right. Okay. So then that being said, I think that we've danced around that and come back to that this is probably the only way to do it, and we've made it as tight as possible that actually is going to make it limiting to for very others to do. But I would echo Councillor DeBoer's sentiment that we need to be careful when we're making these types of changes because we want to promote prime agricultural uses on our prime agricultural lands. Seeing no other speakers to the amendment, moved by Councillor Kiernan and seconded by Councillor Downey, all those in favor? Carried. Now back to the main motion as amended. Are there any other comments, questions? Moved by Councillor Rosa, seconded by Councillor Thompson, all those in favor? Carried. Thank you. With Council's approval, I'd like to ask to move to 8.2, as we do have quite a fair number of residents in the audience, so we can bring that forward. And it was held by Mayor Thompson. 8.2 is Mayor Thompson's motion regarding all-day street parking one-year pilot program. I do need a seconder. Moved by Councillor DeBoer. Mayor Thompson?
Yes. And I did apologize to Tony that I didn't get to him before. This motion is just tied on a deadline. I think where I'm coming from is from James Jenkins. When he approached me at a coffee for council that we had in Bolton. I'm sorry, James, I don't mean to pull you. But it came with a couple others, but you had a real valid concern is it gets talked about. What I'm trying to do is bring it forward for discussion. And maybe people see things through different lenses, but I think all together we can collaborate. And what I'm really trying to say is there's a lot of data. There's data on safety. There's data on traffic. There's data on emergency services, paramedic services, you name it. There's a lot of things that we probably even thought of that we need to. We need to understand what the cycling component is. We need to understand a lot of things. So let's do it as a pilot project to see if we can do something. For the last 20 years, nothing's been done, and it just keeps escalating and escalating. And as James was saying, I have a lot of young kids now wanting to come the seasons now and getting here to get ice cream. So I have no problem if it needs to go back for staff input, but I really think we need to bring this forward and let's have the discussion. We have to change our ways of doing things to make a difference. It's not going to fix itself, and it's proven that. The traffic fatalities are going up. It's been brought to my concern. My phone's running off the wall every time there's been an accident. So we need to somehow bring this forward and let's have the discussion and figure out how we can make this. So this is the purpose of bringing the motion forward so that we can have creative dialogue. And at the end of this, let's hopefully we've got something that we all can agree to let's go forward and let's try to fix the problem we're trying to solve here because it's not solving itself. And I think you heard me campaign on that for 20 years. It's insanity if you think it's going to fix itself. We have to drive to make the change. And it's about public safety, especially now it's summer season with kids getting ice cream. I really think we need to kind of move on it. And I did hear Ms. Baroshi, thank you for your delegation. But I want to say is I've been on council, and I know there's been a lot of blitzing constantly been done with police. And I don't disagree that we should continue to do that blitzing. But it isn't solving the problem either. But we've got to do something different again. So this is why. Let's get it on the floor, and let's have a lively discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Rosa.
So in order for a pilot to be successful, we really need to plan for the data collection. Okay. There's a lot of questions that need answers before we can proceed with this. As far as I'm concerned, we need to determine what are the measurables right off the top. I'd like to know what a listing of those measurables are going to be. For a successful pilot, we need to determine what it is we need to study while we're doing this. And I'd like to get answers to that as well. We need to consider what we're trying to learn from this. There's got to be some learning here because we need to get educated on what's happening. What data do we need to collect and for how long? Now, I appreciate the comments of 12 months, but I'd like to know where that's coming from. And more importantly, why does it need to be 12 months? I need a little more clarification on that. And I respect the fact that we want to look at different seasons as well, but, you know, would it work with a shorter period of time? What questions do we need answered throughout the process? And will we also consult with residents and business owners during this time to get feedback? Are our first responders involved? What involvement will they have? Do they support the pilot program as we're moving forward with it? What does EMS feel? What does fire feel? What does OPP feel? These are questions I think we need answered before we go ahead with that. How will the pilot program affect response times? I know Mr. Mezzapelli had a great presentation. I really appreciated the information. But during those rush hour time periods, are we good with that? I'd like to find out more. I'd like to find out directly from those services whether we're going to be okay during this time, because I do feel that that's something really important for us to consider. Who will be conducting the study? That's really important. How will data be collected? And more importantly, how will it come back to council? In what format? Like, I think we need to figure that out as well before we do this. Will our council be given an opportunity to discuss other possibilities, other solutions to the parking problems? For example, I have some solutions I'd like to bring forward as well, and I'd like to be able to have an opportunity to discuss those other solutions as well. So we'd like to have a time maybe for council to speak and collaborate and see whether or not there are other options as well that could support as well the public safety. Will we take suggestions from the public? Are we going to make it open to them? Will they be able to provide feedback throughout the process? You know, I think that's really important because those are the people that we are representing, and I also feel we need to engage them in the discussions while this is happening. It's my understanding that the Region Appeal has conducted some studies already. Do we have access to those results? Are they available? Can we have staff bring them back as part of the report? You know, I'd like to take a closer look at that. As a new member of council, I'd like to dig deep into this. From the public meetings we conducted in the past, it was pretty clear to me, and also from the canvassing I did throughout the election, that there's a lot of resistance to this. So if we are going to move forward on it, we need to be very careful and we need to be very clear about what we're trying to accomplish through this pilot project. I would suggest that we refer this back to staff. We need some of these questions answered or at least established before we go into this, so that this way we have a clear plan, a clear direction, and more importantly, we have a full understanding of what we're trying to accomplish over the next 12 months. Because once we have that evidence, I think we can make an educated determination on whether or not this has to go forward. And I come from a world where data is very important in education, right? So I fully support the collection of data. And I think it's very important for us to have that information. But we need that plan before we move forward. So it's something I think everyone needs to consider. And I think we need a little more time on this. Thank you.
Sorry. So, Councillor Rosa, you mentioned a motion to refer. Did you want to do that now, or did you want to wait until after we've all had discussion?
I think we need to hear everybody out. Sure.
Thank you. So you can come back on the board afterwards then. Where is Eric?
Chair Ennis, I reached out to Eric to come back.
Okay.
But I do know that, just as information, there is a transportation master plan that was conducted, and it did include this, and it's on our corporate website as well. So if council decides they want to defer it or review that transportation master plan, there is a lot of detail and a plan available on our corporate website as well.
Okay. And just before I continue with the list, well, it's nice to have Mr. Chan here because he did come from the region, so he has that regional knowledge. It is important that all of us note that the purpose of this discussion, that this really is directing it back to the region. So we're asking the region to do the study. We're not doing the study. We're not conducting it. We could ask for input on a terms of reference, but this actually is to go back to the region. And would have to be discussed there as well. Councillor DeBoer.
Thanks. I think it's time that we do something. We have seen it for a long time. I've been around the table here long enough that we know that there is a bypass, there is an alternative. I think it was council that decided to move traffic through town by putting in the parking bans on the two sides of the street. Now that there is an alternative, a regionally owned alternative, we need to start looking at what the downtown core should look like. Orangeville did it. Orangeville took their Broadway and changed the appearance of the town and the downtown area when they got their bypass built, and I think we should start to look at that. As far as having further discussion, we can have all the discussions we want. We've just got to get the first step, and that is to implement and allow for on-street parking at this point. I think that Rob made good points with regards to the traffic volume that's there, and it was accomplished in diverting traffic from the downtown through Bolton to the bypass, and the volume of traffic has decreased. What does happen, though, is, and Councillor Innes will know, is that we deal with that in Palgrave now. We will deal with traffic on the other roads, but if the region and improvements are made, to Highway 50, and we continue to push the region to make improvements on Highway 50 north of town and on Highway 9 by the province, then maybe we can resolve some of the other problems. But I do think it's important to start making some of these steps, and the first step I still believe is the right one, and that is to start the parking. Rob did bring some pretty good designs. He did present them here as far as what the downtown core should look like, and that is what I would like to see us start to look at. It would be nice to start to look at providing parking, providing some of the appearances, providing for opportunities to have more space, narrowing at the crosswalks as opposed to having to walk across four lanes of traffic, narrowing it down. And the region has spent a lot of money there to do some improvements, but we definitely should continue. And this can be the first step. And if we want to have discussions on it, let's make it a project and have the representatives of the area lead the discussion on what this really should look like. And I'd be happy to participate in it because the downtown core in Bolton, including the Highway 50 portion of it south in front of the plazas, we should definitely start to consider what it should look like all the way down to Mayfield Road and start making that happen. So I think that the fact that Alan's brought this forward, Mayor Thompson's brought this forward, I think we just got to get started on it, get the region to do the work that they need to do, and our traffic people to do the work that they need to do, and let's start it now because there is going to be a lot more people walking the sidewalks here now that the nice weather's finally showed up, and look forward to the redevelopment of downtown core of Bolton.
Thank you. Councillor Downey.
Thank you. Through you, Chair Innes. I agree with my colleagues, and I think, you know, just to give Councillor Rosa some peace of mind, this really is a request. I'm looking at the motion here, and that the town requests the Region Appeal to implement a one-year all-day street pilot program on Queen Street to evaluate the impact to residents, traffic, and businesses, and report back and share their findings. So really this is direction to start the conversation and move something forward, I think, that we can all buy into, that will help the businesses, help the residents, and create a safer streetscape and a safer downtown core.
Thank you. Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you. Through you, Chair Innes. I also want to, you know, speak to my colleague, Councillor Rosa, because I truly appreciate his thoughts and concerns on this. And I know this is really important to him, but I have a bit. First of all, Mr. Mezzapelli did bring forward some data, and data is what we were looking for, and there was data available from the region. There's probably hard data from EMS on response times that have been affected or not affected. In regards to public feedback, and I totally understand that, and there has to be public feedback, but correct me if I'm wrong, there has been public feedback through the election, coffee with council. Your residents do reach out a lot, and I understand the North Hills concern with it, but there was a bypass built at great expense. So I have to speak to that. I have to, again, come back to the data that shows that there is a reduction in traffic volumes as a result of that bypass. So when we look at other case scenarios such as Orangeville, Georgetown, Erin, that all offer, as well as Brampton, that all offer downtown all-day parking, by and large, they have vibrant, bustling downtown cores with proper businesses, people wandering around, little cafes. They have, a revitalization. Georgetown is an historic downtown core, just like Bolton, as is Orangeville. As far as safety goes, I'm going to speak to all of these. You know, my common sense, and I'd love to see some data, and this motion does say come back to us with data. You've got right now multiple lanes zipping through. Common sense tells me that by adding a barrier with the downtown parking, that people can't control everyone's bad behavior, but people will use a little more caution. Because there are these parked vehicles and because there are bustling people around. So I think it has the potential to increase safety. Mr. Mezzapelli showed us a picture of a car going through a light and coming through a almost hitting a building. I didn't know about that. Pardon? Yeah. It hit the building. So we had, I mean, I spent my career downtown Brampton, and we had all-day parking, and a car careened right through our front lobby. You can't control these things. One-offs will happen. So on-street parking, not on-street parking, isn't going to necessarily have that, you know, never happen. But again, I think safety should be increased by doing that. I think that 12 months is a reasonable time because we need to see holiday times, different holiday weekends, different weather conditions, different seasons, different whether school's in, school's out. But I wonder, to achieve what Councillor Rosa would like, which I'm very interested in, could these things be done simultaneously? Could we potentially look at this 12-month pilot project and implement studies and data collection simultaneously? So therefore we achieve both things. You know, to hire out a firm to do another study, for gosh, we do a lot of studies and it costs a lot of money. I'd like to see if there's more data available through the province, through the region, you know, hopefully we can move this forward even with an amendment to get something started. But again, I do want to keep your concerns, Councillor Rose's concerns, in mind as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Thompson.
Hearing everybody speak reminds me when I was in Halifax last year for the FCM conference. The main throughfare that runs you by the Citadel is a major throughfare, along with a few others. And what they do is, in the summertime, is they did a full year-round study to find out how to manage traffic. They don't have on-street parking in the wintertime because they get snow, more snow, and more snow again. So they got to have a place to put it. But in the summertime, what they've done is they've gone with parking as well as patios for the restaurants and the different places all along the way, which has slowed the traffic down and works. And as what it did was it revitalized those areas. And even though it was major thoroughfares, it gave people confidence to get around and do that. Well, if we want to even do that in Bolton, I think we're going to have to try something for a 12-month period to find out what works, what doesn't work. You know, if someone does want to put a patio out there, we need to figure out, does it work? If it doesn't, it's never going to happen. But we have to start somewhere. And I know Tim Mendelson, I remember with the former chief inspector, came to the BIA after we took the trucks off, and he was saying the average speed going through there was 80 kilometers. And especially at nighttime. And that's quite dangerous. And as they said, unless you had photo radar, there's just no way the police could even slow the traffic down. So there's some real challenges that we need to figure out. And I understand, and I'll really, you know, Tony, where you want to go with this, I get this. But I really think we really got to... Let's try something to see what we can do. And this is what I was hoping to do, is bring this to discussion, let everybody discuss it. And I'll turn it back to Tony to see what he has to say. But I'm just saying there's just a lot of things out there. We know fire, paramedics, everybody, and we've had a good test run, I think, as Rob did say, is when we had the bridge shut down to a single lane, getting traffic through. So I've even been parked as far as Egan's, and I time myself on the clock. And it was less than 5 minutes to get through the whole downtown core. But again, if we want to change the mood, we got transit coming, we got cyclists, we want to do this. So let's find this out. Let's get the data to really understand what we're really looking at. And that's what I'm just saying. I was trying to keep it as broad as I possibly can, because there's probably something that Eric Chan and them might think of that we don't know. So that's why I was trying to keep it as wide open as we can. But Councillor Rosa, I know this is in your area, but I want to ask... If I could, Madam Chair, if I could ask Mr. Chan, we know transit's going to change the mode, but also, you know, that's a possibility. But also for whatever, you know, cycling, trying to change. But to change the characterization and habits, we almost need a year of data to get it, correct?
Mr. Chan.
It's all yours.
through Chair Innes, that is correct. The vision in downtown Bolton Court, according to the Bolton Master Plan, is on transformation, on how do we revitalize the downtown core through transportation elements, right? The elements that we know at that time in this study is through parking and active transportation, so the bike lane, and this is part of this ongoing, and this is a two-stage process. First stage, this interim solution per the Bolton Transportation Master Plan is to include the all-day parking. Ultimately, in the longer-term future, is to incorporate bike lane. There's also one other element is on the intersection of Queen and King. Through the master plan, there's a recommendation of introducing a dedicated left turn and right turn lane on the southbound so that it has the effect of still keeping the traffic circulation and moving traffic going along while limiting the capacity for the throughput so that people can, the long distance commuting trip can use the bypass.
Thank you. Tony, are you bringing a referral now, or are you speaking first?
Yeah, I'm.
Because I'd like an opportunity to speak too before you bring your referral.
So I'm going to make a couple of comments, and then I will.
You want me to go first? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to start off by saying, while Bolton may not feel like it, they're very lucky compared to the other two major centers that I represent, because I will never get the trucks off those roads.
Right.
Caledon East and Palgrave will live with that truck traffic forever. Unless the province would like to help with the 427. So, and like Bolton, Councillor DeBoer and I have had communities that have had fatalities on those roads and fatalities of pedestrians. So while I understand that we're not 100% sure what may happen, I think the status quo is not acceptable. We can't continue to do nothing. We know that it's a problem. You could look at the OPP data that shows the number of accidents that are in that core. You can look at the region's data about the speed of traffic traveled through that core, the volume increase or decrease. You could look at the Facebook and the text messages that I get from the various business owners every time there's anything from a fender bender to something on the sidewalk. At the end of the day, status quo isn't working, and we have to try something. I like to base decisions based on as much information as possible, and that means that we collect the data, and then we make a solid decision. So I support the pilot. I think it is important, like I said earlier, that we have to remember that this is going to the region. I think that as a regional councillor, I will be asking that the terms of reference for this pilot project include things like the response times of emergency vehicles, the increase or decrease of pedestrian traffic. Something else that I'd like to see, which I think would be interesting, is working with a Better Business Bureau to get the Interact transactions to find out how much money is being spent in the downtown core before and after, because that's a study of what's actually happening in that core for our businesses and what's working. And so I think there's some things that we should be asking for so that we can measure, and I understand where Councillor Rosa is coming from. We need to know what we're measuring. But I think we also need to... we need to start moving it forward, because we've been sitting on it for a really long time and nothing seems to be happening. And it's unfortunate that Councillor Groves isn't here today, but she will have an opportunity to speak to this next week when we're at council, and that's important. And I'm happy when I'm sitting at that regional table to have those discussions with regional staff to make sure that the things that we're measuring and to understand the outcomes that we want to come. And it's not uncommon. There's lots of times where I'm meeting with regional staff and regional meetings, and my area counterpart is sitting there with me because sometimes Nick thinks about things that I don't and is just as familiar with the community, if not more so than I am. So... I would encourage both of you to be present in that, because while it's the downtown core of Bolton, it's completely surrounded by our ward, and it impacts our ward greatly. So I support it. I support it moving forward. I know that Councillor Rosa wants to perhaps refer it. I would ultimately suggest, instead of referring it, to actually amending it to include something about participation of a terms of reference, making sure that you're at that table to develop those terms of reference. Because at the end of the day, the region's going to conduct that study. It probably is, at some point in the next 6 months, be turned back over to the town to continue that study to give us the end results when we do that transaction between Albee and Vaughan and Queen Street. So I just put that out there. I think that is a far better solution. Whether or not anybody makes that amendment, I will commit today as the regional councillor for Wards 4 that I will ensure that Councillor Rosa and Councillor DeBoer are at that table having those conversations with regional staff, making sure that they are part of developing the terms of reference for that study. Councillor Rosa.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate those comments. The one thing I really feel we need before we proceed with this is I really believe that we need to get reassurance that emergency services are on board with the pilot. I've had some discussions. I'm getting mixed messages. I've had discussions with the OPP, and they're telling me they're having a hard time supporting it. I've had discussions with EMS. They're saying, you know, they see that it could work. So before we move forward, I would like to refer back just to get some clarity from those first responders on how they feel about the pilot and any if they can support it for the 12-month period in the way that we're bringing it forward. I think we owe that to our community. I think we owe it. If public safety is the top priority here, then I would like to hear from those experts and those first responders and the frontline workers, because I think it's really important to have that as part of this. So that's what I'm asking for, is more information from that. Thank you.
Okay. Any comments on the referral? The only thing that I would add to the referral that should the referral fail, I would ask that staff be prepared to come back at council next week with that information about the support of a pilot program for the 12 months, because I think it is important for our residents to hear and will help ease some of Councillor Rose's concerns should the referral fail. If the referral fails, that staff bring back that information from emergency response with regards to their opinion of a 12-month pilot project. And the speakers? So a referral moved by Councillor Rosa. I need a seconder. Seconded by Councillor Kiernan. All those in favor? 2, 3. All those opposed? 2, 3, 4. Back to the main motion. Did anybody want to add an amendment, or do you just want a staff direction to bring back that information?
Yes, please.
Add an amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, add the staff
or
information, bring it back.
Yeah. Sorry, Councillor Rosa, as direction to staff, or do you want it in the motion?
As direction to staff.
Direction?
Fine.
Okay. Mayor Thompson.
What I was wondering is could staff have that stuff ready for Nitlis? I know what Councillor Innes asked for next Tuesday evening. I think it'd be fair, because we'll come back and vote on it again, and that way Councillor Groves is here as well, and we can hear whatever you can bring to the table, especially if we can get something from OPP, fire, and paramedics in hard copy so that we can understand what we're working with, and we'll take another look at it.
Party.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and I'm gonna take it one step further, because while emergency services are very important for attending emergency calls in that area and the response times, I think it's also important to have the response from our engineers, because it's our engineers who are designing and who do our traffic calming as to their support for a 12-month pilot project to determine if it's the best interest to move forward with that full-time in the future. And I know it's a short turnaround time, but I'm going to be honest, we've been dealing with this issue for 7 years, and I already know what the responses are from all of those organizations, and they can give it to us in 2 weeks, I'm pretty sure. An actual motion? Okay. So the clerk would like a motion. Moved by Councillor Rosa, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. that staff be directed to have a memo regarding OPP, fire, EMS, and engineering departments regarding a 12-month pilot period for the council meeting on May 28th.
Chair Innes, if I could just clarify, for engineers, it's town staff engineers and regions. I just wanted to clarify and understand the request for engineers from the town.
Yeah. I think it's important that we have the towns and we ask for the regions. They've been dealing with it. They already have all the studies. So I don't think it's going to take that long. So this is an amendment moved by Councillor Rosa, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. All those in favor? Carried. Now back to the main motion as amended, moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor DeBoer. All those in favor? Carried. Thank you. With Council's permission, I'm going to move to 6.3. Everyone on Council okay with that? Thank you. It's item 6.3, Staff Report 2019-52, Feasibility Study for the Reuse of the Historic Alton School, that due to the projected cost of both capital and operating, the Town of Caledon not pursue an agreement with the Peel District School Board for the adaptive reuse of the old Alton Public School, and that the Town of Caledon continue to work with the Peel District School Board to identify potential funding sources to fully fund the repurposing of the old Alton Public School as outlined in ERA Architects. And that staff be authorized to negotiate with the Peel District School Board for fair consideration of the land exchange for the Alton School in lieu of the town receiving the old Alton School property. I need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Kiernan, seconded by Councillor St. Clair. Remember, it doesn't mean you're supporting it. It just means we can discuss it. And this item was held by Councillor St. Clair.
Yes, thank you. I see some pretty big numbers here, and I guess looking at the history of the building and certainly Caledon's role in near-urban tourism and the importance of the building to the community going back many generations, I think that there's more work to be done here. It's certainly a very challenging issue given that there isn't enough land for two septic systems, but I think we have to work on that. Certainly there's a substantial amount of land the town owns abutting the school properties to the east. And lots of room for further septic systems out there. And I also think we have to do some considerable work on where we can get grants that the municipal corporation is eligible for, particularly at the federal level. But also if there's some partnerships that can be done with, for example, the Alton Village Association, who've done a remarkable job at obtaining grants and turning the old Barber Carriage Works property into a magnificent local park, and they're able to obtain grants for that. So I think we have to do a bunch of work here on several fronts, continue to work with Region Appeal School Board, but also the Alton Village Association, and certainly the town, on how we can work on this septic system issue and find new viable uses for the building, some of which have been mentioned. So those would be my comments so far. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor DeBoer.
I think having some further discussion on it, but it's an eye-opener in seeing the costs associated with it. And I know that we went through the same exercise with although a smaller school, the Palgrave School, and that was realizing that the cost to maintain that site with a brand new, having to put a septic tank in and having the potential work that would have had to have went in to keep it active became very difficult for us to justify. But I think if the councillors of the area want to look at finding other options, then I think that that should be, in most cases, when these kind of reports come forward, that's when the community sees that there is an opportunity, or if we want an opportunity, the community has to seize it and make it happen. Because you know, there is only so many dollars, and we can only invest so many tax dollars into facilities. But I'm sure in that corner of Callan and the village of Alton, there's probably somebody waiting for an opportunity to have a building and participate.
Thank you, Councillor Kiernan.
Thank you. Through you, Chair Ennis. Councillor Sinclair definitely, said some things that are important to me. I mean, the septic is right now a sticking point. There is property abutting to the east, I guess, southeast. But my understanding is that's a playground and or a ballpark or something. So do we take that away? Is that even doable? I don't know. But the sticking point in regards to separating the building seems to be the septic starting point anyway. I did ask at our meeting that staff come back with information regarding grants and what's accessible, you know, heritage, that kind of thing. Let's see what kind of money's out there. We also talked about potentially, you know, engaging and seeking corporate partnerships. This is a lot of money. It's unthinkable to me. We talked, one thing that we wanted to put forward, I want to talk about is, you know, a 99-year lease for a nominal fee, that we can do that. My understanding in my conversations today is that that's fine, but the school board basically just won't play ball. Can we go back to them with discussions for some kind of compromises on both sides? This building is very important. It's a very important heritage building. It's a very important part of our history here in Caledon. Although not being used as a school anymore, it certainly was a vibrant and active school until pretty recently. Funnily enough, we've got the region coming forward with $1.7 million to put an early childhood care center in one of the other villages in northwest Caledon. Perhaps that money could be shifted to the Alton School to achieve that objective for some kind of early years. Pipe dream, maybe. Probably not doable, but I think we need to keep pushing on these, keep having these conversations, because right now the school board just saying no, you know, it's not ours. I think we need to engage with them, whether that means we offer up a certain portion of the time and the ownership back to the school board when there's maybe a shared ownership. I don't know. This is brainstorming. But I want us to stay active and involved and at the table to seek some solutions for this important heritage building. And I'm looking to, you know, the staff to help me do that and hopefully come back with that grant information as well. Thank you.
Mayor Thompson.
I understand where the councillors are coming from, and I think it's right. I think this schoolhouse, it's not going to blow down anytime soon. It's two schoolhouses built together to make one big unit and then a roof over top. I think it has some unique characteristics, but I would like to see if the Peel District School Board would participate and become a partner and, you know, for a dollar a year long, you know, for a long-term lease. My question is when you look at the boiler costs in the report, have we looked at other alternative heating, like ground source heating? Because I know ground source complements the old boiler system. I'm just wondering if there's other ways that we can look innovative-wise to make this work to serve the community. I know the community is very proud of this building, and it's an historic feature, and it's our culture. It's something unique about Caledon. So dollars and cents, it gets to be a costly one, but I think we have to look from the practical aspect. I think this identifies what Caledon is and what it's about. So I would like to go back to Mr. Arbuckle, if I could, Madam Chair, and ask him, are these the possibilities that we can have that discussion with the school board?
Mr. Arbuckle.
So through Chair Innes to Mayor Thompson. So just for clarity, as indicated in the report, the school board has confirmed that they are interested. It's probably a little bit putting it down a little bit. They're very interested in securing a long-term lease with the town. However, they've also been very clear that all capital and operating costs would be the responsibility of the lessee, which would be the town. So ultimately, again, if we're directed to look at alternative heating arrangements or other pieces that may bring down those costs, we could do that. However, again, just for clarity, the school board has indicated that they will not be putting any money towards capital or operations. And to be somewhat fair, there is school board funding is very restrictive. So any dollars that aren't put directly towards in-classroom learning, the school board has some restrictions in relation to the things that they can spend on in relation to their building facilities.
So that's where I'm coming back, is like a dollar a year kind of agreement, because if we're going to put the overhead and the expense into it, we need to have a commitment from them. They don't, and obviously that tells me, especially with what you're right, the restrictions the school board has, they're not going to reinvest. If we're going to do anything, we need to move now, because that building will start to deteriorate just like a home that we live in. If you don't keep fixing those things, it just starts to pile up. So I think it's something that we need to look at the possibilities. One is that I think the consultants did a really good job on that report showing the opportunities. And I know we're all looking at things at the hard conservative point of view of expense and return on investment, but I'm just saying if we can get I just like to look at to see if it's possibility to get in options, but I want to make sure that the school board realizes they're not putting in a dollar in, then they're not going to be getting a dollar for it. So I think that's where I really think we need to have a very strong discussion on. But I also like to see what other options are for when you look at boiler costs. I'm sure there's more other efficient ways that we can look at maintaining it. But I think I know I've heard loud and clear from the community, and I think if we have a community buy-in, I think we can make this work. But I know, as one of my other counselors said, the Ward 1 counselors I know are dedicated, and I would like to see what, working with the community, what they can come back with.
Thank you. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair Innes, to Mr. Arbuckle. During the conversations, sorry, I'm just looking at the piece that the consultant outlined a kind of a future use, and I understand that there's discussions with the school board, but if their capacity is limited to be part of the project, could we not turn to private sector? I know in the community center in Southfield Village, we have private sector daycare coming in. And so there's a 30-year lease that secures at least some revenue for the building. Is that something that we could look at in this situation?
Mr. Arbuckle?
So through Chair Innes to Councillor Downey. So the model ultimately that ERA Architects imagines would essentially be that the town would assume ownership, or sorry, not ownership, sorry, would be a lease, long-term lease. And then ultimately we would be a landlord in relation to securing different services within that. Within this piece, it is related to that heritage piece, the daycare piece, and then the arts and culture piece.
Okay, thank you. It is a large number, but I think, as Mayor Thompson said, at some point you have to just recognize that if we're making heritage and arts and culture a priority in our community, then we have to spend the dollars in order to do that. Hopefully, at the end of the process, we would have some partners that create some stream of revenue, and that we become, like a lot of our other facilities, net neutral, like in Parks and Rec and that type of thing. Thank you.
Any other speakers? Seeing none, moved by Councillor Kiernan, Seconded by Councillor St. Clair. All those in favor? Carried. We will now go back to presentations, and I'll call upon Laura Hall, Manager of Regulatory Services, and Patrick Trafford, Analyst, Regulatory Services, to approach the podium to provide a presentation concerning the Animal Care and Control Bylaw update.
Good afternoon, Chair Innes and members of General Committee. My colleague Patrick Trafford and I are here this afternoon to provide you with an overview of a proposed new animal care and control bylaw that we will be bringing forward at a future meeting. So the main purpose of our review is to develop a bylaw that works for both the enforcement and on the administrative end, while also supporting the overall objectives of the mandate of animal services, which is essentially to promote responsible pet ownership. We are seeing a fundamental shift in the intent and purpose of animal-related bylaws to have an added focus on aspects of care, which we will expand on in our presentation. So our intent today is to provide you with further details on why this review is important, our current service level in terms of enforcement, what we hear on a fairly regular basis from the public, an overview of what we know to date regarding the changes to the OSPCA service levels. We will also provide you with an overview of what we heard when we presented our proposed new animal care and control bylaw to the public, and give you a high-level overview of what we are proposing to change in the bylaw. And we will also be touching on a pilot program that we would like to bring forward for the community with respect to homeless cats. So a key objective of our review originated from a review within Animal Services on what exactly the mandate is and the service that we provide. We know we facilitate a lot of pet adoptions and we respond to complaints, but at the core of what we do is promote responsible pet ownership. We have been increasing our awareness campaign through various mediums in this regard, but our current bylaw is quite challenging to enforce. We are also challenged with the wording within the bylaw, which only provides us with the ability to charge a pet owner to achieve compliance. So, for example, complaints about a barking dog are often taken to court, which isn't a good use of our time or the court time. We are also experiencing a steady stream of calls from the public who share a perception that animal control at the local level should deal with standards of care and not have such matters reported to the OSPCA. We know they do their best, but the reality is the OSPCA office that services the Caledon area is a new market, so resources are limited and response times can be challenging. We are also seeing more and more municipalities add standards of care to their bylaws to assist with those enforcement efforts. So currently Mississauga, Oshawa, Kitchener, Waterloo, Clarington, and Oakville have all added standards of care into their bylaws. We are also seeing some municipalities actually relabel their bylaws from animal care and control to more of a pet responsible pet ownership type bylaw. So in terms of animal related enforcement, we respond on a complaint basis as we do for all our bylaws. As you can see on the slide, we are experiencing an increase in the number of complaints regarding animals running at large. But I am pleased to note that stoop and scoop and noise complaints are down, which could be attributed to the large amount of public engagement and education that we have been doing. Not including on-call coverage, we have approximately 1,600 hours of devoted full-time animal control officer time to deal with matters. So in 2018, we spent approximately 1,500 of those hours responding to complaints, which does demonstrate that we have a little capacity to take on more. Oh, I think I skipped over one, sorry. We have observed on a fairly weekly basis, standard of care concerns are reported to the town. So we see that pretty much weekly we get a call. Such concerns include dogs left out in extreme weather conditions, the basic keeping of dogs, and less frequent, but we do get calls of suspected cases of abuse. Standards of care are not currently in the town's bylaw, so such concerns are forwarded over to the OSPCA. In discussions with the OSPCA, they indicated that on average they respond annually to approximately 30 complaints in Caledon. 19 of those complaints are related to care, with a handful of cases being more serious in nature and subsequently leading to seizures of animals in unfavorable conditions. So the animal cruelty framework in Ontario falls under the OSPCA Act. It's interesting to note that the OSPCA legislation has actually been in place for about 100 years. But they aren't currently a government agency, but instead a private charity that has been given quasi-law enforcement powers and responsibilities that are not normally afforded to such organizations. So as such, such powers were challenged in court and found to be unconstitutional because the agency is not the agency is not subject to the same oversight as other government organizations with similar powers, so for example, your police services. The OSPCA has indicated that they intend to step away from enforcement as of June 28th of this year. The Ontario government did request that they continue to stay on till the end of the year, but they did refuse that request. So what we know, the Ontario government is working on a new model, and last week they posted a survey to solicit public input on animal welfare matters. Police services continue to have the authority to enforce the laws that protect animals, and we anticipate that such powers may be expanded to include local municipalities. I'll now pass on the presentation, the next portion of the presentation, to Patrick.
Thank you, Laura. So public consultation was a crucial part of the review process. An online survey was run for 30 days with 161 respondents completing it. All wards were well represented, and only 2% of respondents were identified as non-residents. A public open house meeting was also held on March 26th with approximately 20 attendees. So what we heard through the survey is that there was support for strengthening standards of care in the bylaw and for enforcement at the local level. And through the open house, we heard that there are in the community passionate and vocal individuals with respect to homeless cats. Now to review the key proposed changes. So for administrative updates, we made the bylaw more user-friendly by improving the layout and making sure that the content is comprehensive. We reworked the language so the expectations are clear for the public, and we made the enforcement powers and processes very clearly outlined as well. Concerning standards of care, standards included in the bylaw address the necessities to really protect animal welfare, like adequate food, water, shelter, and vet care. And there are additional standards as well that are included to address very visible public concerns, like an animal being left in a hot car or outside in extreme temperatures. For dogs and cats specifically, there are new restrictions on tethering for dogs, like limiting the amount of time that a dog can actually be tethered, and also prohibiting the use of pronged collars. And there's a proposed limit of 5 cats permitted to be kept on a lot as well, because under the current bylaw, there is no limit, which can lead to things like overcrowding. Regarding dangerous dogs, mitigating factor is now a defined term, which gives the discretion to ensure that the designation is applied correctly. And there are new conditions for dangerous dogs to protect the public, with clear timelines to make sure that those conditions are fulfilled, which improves enforcement as well. The timeline to appeal an order and the powers of the appeal board are also set out very clearly with respect to dangerous dogs. With respect to racing pigeons, we acknowledge that there are individuals in the community that do keep these currently and that they are passionate about their sport. However, we have also had complaints about this in the past. The draft bylaw would permit pigeons with very careful regulation as a result. We would permit them on residential and agricultural properties is what's being proposed, but the number would be limited, and we are currently in conversation with local organizations that raise pigeons to discuss that further. Pigeons, you would also require a 1 acre minimum lot size in order to keep them. The loft itself would be required to be set back 6 meters from any lot line, and there would be a 15-meter setback from any dwelling on an adjacent lot. There are care and keeping requirements as well to protect animal welfare and minimize any impacts to neighbors. And as they would be kept for the purposes of the sport, they would be allowed to be let out for training, flights, so released from their loft. But then the number released at any given time and the times that you could release them would be carefully regulated. And I'll pass the presentation over to Laura again.
All right, community cats. So when we engaged the public during the review process, we received a fair amount of feedback from local caretakers that tend to cat colonies in Caledon, mainly in the Bolton area. Over the last several years, staff have also received an increase in concerns related to homeless cats and have been engaging with other municipalities to determine humane ways to address the homeless cat population. We hosted a meeting with local caretakers and discovered that Caledon has approximately 30 identified colonies throughout various industrial areas and also in local stormwater park areas. Each colony is looked after by a devoted caretaker that provides food and water for the cats on a daily basis. They also build small shelters for the cats. As part of the bylaw review, we are proposing to implement a community cat pilot program to support this local caretaker group. For those of you who are not familiar with community cats, this is a new area for me as well. They are essentially unowned cats that live outdoors. Community cats are also commonly known as feral cats and are generally not socialized or friendly to the average person. They often live full, healthy lives with their feline families, which we also refer to as colonies. In a community cat program which exists across Canada, community cats are trapped and brought to a local vet where they are spayed, neutered, vaccinated, and they're also ear-tipped, which is the universal sign that a cat has been neutered or spayed, and then the cat is returned to their outdoor colony. The objectives of such programs are really to control the homeless cat population from expansion. It's also to provide a better quality of life to community cats and to reduce nuisance behaviors resulting from free-roaming cats. From the outreach we conducted and the research we did, such programs have managed over time to reduce homeless cat populations by about 30% and are well received by the property owners where the cats reside. We know a lot of the caretakers in Caledon have expressed to us that they have formed positive relationships with the property owners in a lot of the industrial areas that they service. As part of our initial proposal, we would like to start up a pilot program to spay, neuter, and vaccinate 20 community cats. As part of the pilot, we will be partnering with local caretakers that essentially do most of the work. The caretakers will trap the cats from a colony in Caledon and drop them off at the shelter. We will work with a local vet to spay, neuter, vaccinate, and the cats. And once they have recovered, the caretaker will retrieve the cat from the from our care and return it to his colony and continue to care for it. The pilot program will cost us about $5,000, which will be used to purchase traps and vet services. We are proposing to use funds currently available in the Animal Services Reserve. We feel that Caledon has an opportunity right now to proactively manage community cats, and this initiative is an important step to control the population. So that concludes our presentation. Our next steps, as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, are to bring forward a report for your consideration with the new proposed bylaw.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from council? No? Nobody's going to say, like, Bob Barker, have your pet spayed or neutered. Thank you very much for your presentation. We will now move to item 7.2, request for universal signage. Item was held by Mayor Thompson.
Yes, well, I see we got it in a couple, I got it even in the memorandums as well. Can someone expand a little bit what we're going to look at for these community signs? Because I know they came up once before back in, I think, Councillor Sinclair's first era as councillor, but I think everything gets lost in the, I just like to know what they look like and what they consist of. where we're going with this.
Clerk is going to answer that.
Okay.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Mayor Thompson. So at the Accessibility Advisory Committee this month, the committee was dealing with universal signs, and a memo was provided to them in regards to what a universal sign is. And really, it's a sign that is in a community that will say maybe there's a deaf child playing or there's somebody with, with a disability. We are aware that there are signs in the community. However, they were never, from what we understand, placed by the town. And so the communication that we provided to the committee was exactly that, that currently we do not, we being the town, does not have a program in regards to universal signage, nor do we have any history in regards to that. So the committee asked, so they received that information, and they are requesting, again, additional information. At this point, we're looking for a general committee to provide either staff with further direction in regards to what you would like us to do in regards to this matter, because if it is sent back to staff at this time, we do not have... It is simply factual that there is not an existing program in place. We do not know how the signs go forward. And so we're struggling as well. So I know Councillor Early had dealt with this matter at the committee, and so I know she mentioned to me that she would be ready to speak to it at the council meeting next week. But ultimately, staff is really at asking for direction from committee.
Well, if I can, Madam Chair, if I can still speak to it, I personally like to see staff come back to see what that looks like. I know we can't get that done right now. We need to probably bring it through the budget cycle that we're going to have this fall. But I do know that the agriculture community is looking for signs, you know, for farm machinery using the roads that used to be there, because a lot of people do not seem to respect farm machinery, especially at this time of year. It's a bit of a liability. So, and also, you know, there's the also the volunteer firefighters with the green lights, and there's many things. But having said that, I think universal signage, I have spoke to the Garcia family that have asked, you know, for something similar to that coming into communities. So I would like to have staff go back and look at what that's going to look like. I think we definitely need to make a decision for this fall's budget,
so,
if necessary.
So through the chair to Mayor Thompson, I think it's important to note that any signs up in communities are actually not, and I'll look to my colleague, Mr. Dollemeyer, are not not enforceable by under the HTA, under the Highway Traffic Act, nor are they, they are enforceable. In my understanding, there are generally signs that are placed in the community as information or notice. So I guess my question to you is, what are you requesting staff to do?
One is, let's find out what we're talking about for universal signs, what they look like. What would it entail to know what we're dealing with? Because I think a lot of the signs, I don't think anything's enforceable these days, and I've been tongue-in-cheek on that, especially for speeding. But I think if it's creating awareness for public safety and public concern, something to look at. I read it, and it was pretty vague. I just didn't really understand it. I'd like to get a little more detail to know what we're talking about.
So I would suggest, I know that the Region Appeal has a guideline that they use. I recently went through a process of having some hearing impaired signs put up on regional roads because families who have children with hearing impaired lived in that area, and so it's not under the Highway Traffic Act. It was guidelines that the Region of Peel has and criteria for community safety areas. So I'm wondering if maybe we just ask staff to bring back a report after consulting with the Region of Peel to General Committee at a future date. The only thing that I would may suggest, and it depends on what you are all thinking, we could let it pass now and further continue the discussion at Council when Councillor Early is here, because she did attend the Accessibility Committee meeting and would be able to give more of an insight into the conversation around that table as she was there. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Chair Innes. I guess we pretty much touched on it. I was just going to say I'm not sure that I would wait until the next budget cycle. It doesn't really seem like there's a lot of implication here in terms of just from my perspective and what I have in some of my neighborhoods, where typically it is signs for information when people are driving. If you have a child with hearing impaired in the neighborhood, those are the signs that are put up, and those requests are coming from the parents, obviously, or people in the neighborhood. So, you know, it seems like a pretty simple thing, and we don't really need to reinvent the wheel on this. So if the region has a policy that we can piggyback on, why not just move forward and do that?
So I have a motion that says that staff be directed to prepare a report to General Committee regarding universal signs. Moved by Mayor Thompson, seconded by Councillor Rosa. Councillor DeBoer, did you still want to speak to it? No. That's great. All those in favor? Carried. Thank you. We'll now move to item 8.1, Councillor Kiernan, regarding access to cannabis for medical purposes. We're really tight on time. I just want to remind everybody. So if there's, you held it. If you don't need to hold it, I can. Okay, moved by Councillor Kiernan, seconded by Councillor Rosa. All those in favor? Carried. 8.3, Mayor Thompson regarding illegal dumping. I need a mover and a seconder. Moved by Mayor Thompson, obviously. Seconded by Councillor Downey. And this item was held by Mayor Thompson.
It's going to be rather quick, but I think our community is under siege right now with all the dumping of just about everything. And I think we need to push back extremely hard. The Peel Federation, the community's had enough. And I got to tell you, and I've lived here 58 years, and I've never seen it as bad as it is this year. It's just out of control, and we have to push back extremely hard and up the fines. And the police said that they will make this a priority, but we need to have it come as a council motion. So to me, I think it's just the start of what we need to do, and this is where I'm looking forward to send it to staff to see what their recommendations are.
Thank you. Seeing no, everybody agrees. It's an issue that we've all been fighting. Constant, right? All those in favor? Carried. 8.4, Councillor DeBoer regarding alternate member of regional. Oh, that was approved in consent. Sorry. Correspondence. Move to correspondence. Is there anything in the correspondence package that requires action? Seeing none. Oh, sorry. Mayor Thompson, do you have something?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry. I got one question for 9.2.1, the update on road surface.
Yes.
If I can go forward with that. Torbram Road, you're looking at doing that. Have you done the traffic counts? That's a really heavily traveled road. I'm just wondering, is the traffic counts going to be too high for that kind of surfacing on that road? And I do know you missed one, Shaw's Creek Road between Old Base and Bush.
through you, Chair Innes, to Mayor Thompson. Torbram Road, it's when you're doing double surface treatment, you're not doing a single lift. Single lift is 2,500 active transportation vehicles versus 5,000. We're going to do a more of a double surface treatment program that allows us to go up to roads that can handle up to 5,000 vehicles per day. Right now, Torbram is reaching about 2,200. So we can go with a double surface treatment there. It gives us that chance to move forward and try to survive these roads a bit more better.
Perfect. That's all I need to know. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further? No? Before we go into close, I just want to ask council members, I know that we need to discuss 3.3 and 10.1. Is there any discussion required on 10.2? 10.2, confidential memorandum litigation affecting the municipality townwide and matters that are subject to solicitor client privilege. You didn't read it? Okay, then we will have the discussion. So So I need a Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Downey, that Council shall go into confidential session under Section 239 of the Municipal Act for the following purposes: 3.3, Confidential Staff Report 2019-19, Personal Matters about an Identifiable Individual, Vacancy on the Climate Change Action Planning Task Force; 10.1, Confidential Staff Report 2019-18, A Proposed or Pending Disposition of Land by the Municipality Proposed to Purchase Land from the Town, Triple Crown Line Development Incorporated, Ward 3; 10.2, Confidential Memorandum Litigation Affecting the Municipality, Townwide, and Matters that are Subject to Solicitor Client Privilege. Moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Downey. All those in favor? Carried. Council will now move into confidential session, and members of the public in attendance are welcome to wait until the conclusion of the confidential session, at which time the public portion of the meeting will continue.
Local board employees fill a vacancy on the Climate Change Action Plan Task Force. That staff be directed to advertise on Climate Change Action Plan Task Force vacancy and report back to council. All in favor? Oh, so we need a mover and a seconder. Councillor Sinclair, Councillor Rosa. All in favor? Carried. Okay, next one. Confidential Staff Report 2019-18, Proposed Pending Disposition of Land by the Municipality, Proposal to Purchase Land from the Town, Part 1, Plan 43R38418, be in Part Lot 20, Concession 1, Township of Albion, Ward 3. Confidential Staff Report 2019 regarding subject lands be received for information. That staff proceed as directed. All right, mover, Councillor Kiernan. Councillor DeBoer, all in favor? Carried. Okay. The meeting's now adjourned, and supper's in the cafeteria.